We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Hey everybody, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Today is November 23rd, Monday. It's Monday after week 11, Chris, and terrible week, obviously, for me as a Bengals fan. We'll start there. Brutal injury. We talked about this all year. You keep getting big hits to your quarterback, your prize quarterback. It's going to get hurt. And unfortunately, it was worst case scenario. His knee got wrecked. And you know, it was a clean hit. It wasn't like a dirty play or anything, but his left knee is toast now. We'll see him next year in the case of Joe Burrow. And I don't know. I'm really bummed out about this one.
Yeah, it sucks, man. And it may not be week one, you know, I mean, right. It's pretty far into the season. If there's other ligament damage with the ACL, could be week six, you know, I mean, it could be halfway through next year. I mean, imagine like him being undraftable next August. When with T. Higgins and Boyd and Mixon again, maybe, you know, this would be actually something that could be a huge, you know, offensive situation. But it just goes to show, like, you need an offensive line. You can't do that. You can't just have the quarterback. Andrew Luck dealt with this. By the time they got it right with the offensive line, he was already too beat up to really have a career. And so, you know, you hope Burrow doesn't go down that road, but This is worse than Luck. I mean, Luck was played a few years, you know, before he started to really break down. He broke down right away. And the thing about Burrow and Luck, which is similar, is that both are kind of fearless. Like Burrow is getting his ass kicked every week, but he wasn't really, you didn't see him get the happy feet. You didn't see him really get cowed by it. He would just be like, yeah, whatever, I'd get up after a hit. And so he's one of those guys that, you know, almost like the team has to protect because he's not going to slide and get out, you know, he's going to stay with it. So, horrible luck and kind of malpractice by the Bengals too.
Yeah. And we talk a lot about how in the NFL, you almost need a quarterback with some mobility, but the trade-off of mobility is you get hit a lot more. And you know, like the fourth down play earlier, and you wrote about that in your observations article, it's like, yeah, more of that is going to be a problem. And it came, unfortunately, that problem came a quarter later, but you know, they were ahead. They were rallied. They were, you know, Burrow had like 190 passing yards in the first half. They were moving the ball against a tough pass defense, but he was getting beat up. And, you know, when he comes back, is he going to be that mobile anymore? You know, that's the thing. I worry about that quite a bit. It's kind of like Carson Wentz.
Yeah, Wentz is mobile still a little bit, but Wentz, we can talk about him, but he's like trough Brett Favre. You know, it's all guts, no skills. He'll probably will be at his age. He'll probably come back still pretty mobile. It's just that we'll see how bad the rest of the damage is, but if just an ACL, they'll repair it, it'll heal. He'll be like, he's pretty old, Burrow. Someone's joking about it, like he's already like 30. But, you know, it'll heal, and it's the chronic beatings, you know, like the hip injuries and the back injuries and the soft tissue injuries that make these guys that were once quick and had a quick first step slow.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Steve McNair's, Cam Newton's probably not as fast as he once was. The guy who's just got like beat up over time. Burrow has been beat up, but it's only been, you know, 10 games, and the ACL, as bad as it is, I don't think it's going to make him a statue next year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. But we'll see when he's ready and see what he's like and what the Bengals have done in the off season too. They spent money this past off season, and almost uniformly it hasn't paid off. I mean, Trey Wayne still hasn't played a game. You know, he was their cover corner that they signed.
DJ Reader.
Yeah. He's out. Mackenzie Alexander's missed games.
They signed Mixon.
Yep, that's right.
It's always some money.
Yeah, Jonah Williams, their first-round pick last year, has struggled and has been hurt this year after not playing it down last year. I mean, it's some of this is bad luck. Some of this, though, it's just bad decisions, too. And, you know, this is the Bengals have had, like, so little return from their first-round picks over the years. John Ross hasn't done anything as a pro.
What about Zach Taylor and the GM? Why don't they just get rid of those guys, start over again? I mean, does this seem like a winning crew to you?
It's hard to say with Taylor. I want to give him more time. I think sometimes you need to give it a little bit of time.
It's been 2 years. But he was almost winless last year. It's been 2 years. Why not put in two tight ends and five offensive linemen on every play until Burrow gets enough protection? What's the priority here? You know, like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Why not? Why are you putting him out there getting crushed every game? You're playing the football team. They have one of the best pass rushers in the league. Shouldn't they be going double tight end, playing it conservative? Oh, wait, the offense isn't that good. They're handing off a lot. They're not. Yeah, because we're not going to the playoffs. So our priority is to keep our star quarterback, you know, safe, develop him for this year. And then, you know, when we get a better offensive line, we'll start running a real offense next year. I mean, these guys just like, oh, it's bad luck. It's too bad. This guy's getting crushed every play, so that someone like me or you can just watch and be like, yeah, he takes more hits than anybody. Of course, it's a ticking time bomb. Of course, you're taking hits. It's just a matter of time before you're out for the year and have real damage.
Yeah, and you're in the AFC North. There's no backdoor chance of the playoffs. There's nothing. You know, yes, there's development, and that does have value, but. You know,
still develop
like the Steelers game last week. Why he was in? I know he was like, "I'm no quitter" and all that. Well, sometimes the coach has to be the adult in the room. Say, "Okay, this is a blowout. Let's get him out of here."
Well, leave him in, but hand off and get the ball out quick. I mean, change the offense around. I mean, if you can't protect him, change the offense so that you're still developing him. It's not the offense you'd run if you're trying to optimally score points.
Yeah,
it's not the Super Bowl where you're going to take some chances. This is like total developmental time, and why take any chances?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're always taking some chances by having them out there, but why not, you know, two tight ends and quick release patterns and things like how to preserve himself. Clearly the guy needed to learn how to preserve himself. He's not Russell Wilson, who knows exactly when to slide, although Russell Wilson got beat up for a couple of weeks too, but he's not going to take care of himself. You got to design an offense at this point that is, I mean, I don't know. It just seems like 101, coaching 101. Like, all right, we're out of the playoffs. We're playing the football team. We're playing the Steelers. These are teams that, you know, we're going to want to just design the offense to maximize protection first. And then, you know, if it's going well, we can experiment a little bit. But I would can those guys. And then all the failures of all these picks. I mean, Burrow was a no-brainer pick. There's no skill in drafting him.
Yeah.
I guess T. Higgins was a good pick. But all these failed signings and picks just, seems like just get rid of this crew. I don't see Zach Taylor blowing up somewhere else.
You know, they got a little unlucky. Wayne's has been, you know, all these guys have gotten hurt. And the thing is, that's the first time they've ever spent anything in free agency. That's kind of like, so I can't really throw them under the bus for the signings. #they tried. But
that's fine. But I mean, I don't know. It just seems like this, it doesn't seem like this is you know, it's like the Giants had Shurmur and gave him a chance, and I thought he was going to be good, and he kind of sucks. When they fired him, I was like, yeah, good riddance. Like, he had a couple of years. He didn't develop anybody. He didn't do anything.
It's kind of like quarterbacks for you. You're like, they don't do it the first couple of years, move on, huh?
You got to move on quick. I mean, what are you doing with Zach Taylor for multi? You know, 2 years is enough time for a coach, and then he gets the quarterback hurt. Forget it.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, maybe that's the right play there. Meanwhile, the football team got to 3 wins now. The Giants have 3 wins. The Cowboys have 3 wins. The Eagles have 3 wins and a tie against my Bengals. We could have a 5-win division winner. I don't think we will, but it's possible still.
Yeah, I think six and a half is probably the over under. Six and a half. It'll be hard to get to 7 for any of these teams.
Yeah.
Six probably. I think probably 6.
But those are out-of-division wins for both Washington and Dallas this week. Cowboys looked like a football team. They looked normal this week. Now, their defense was pretty bad in the second half. They came up big at the very end. But still, first half, they played pretty good defense. They're moving the ball. Andy Dalton's not great, but he looked like a real quarterback.
Yeah, they were fine. CeeDee Lamb made an amazing catch on the touchdown. And then Thielen made an even better catch on their touchdown. But it was cool. You know, the Vikings are so funny because they have 3 guys. They have Thielen, Jefferson, and Cook, and that is it. Yeah. Nobody else gets anything. And so those 3 guys are like, you know, Thielen's top 7 receiver, top 5 receiver. Cook is number 1 probably now with Kamara dealing with Tim Tebow, quarterback. And then you got got Jefferson, who's a top 20 receiver. Like, the 3 of those guys are just bananas every week.
Yeah. Every once in a while, you get a little tight ends working there. Barely. Had a game against the Bears on Monday night. Irv Smith had a couple touchdowns in another game. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a very narrow truth. That's nice. It's an investable. It's investable. It's kind of funny that way. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you know, people were like, I don't know what to do about Thielen and Jefferson, because they had those 2 huge running games where all they did was run the ball, basically, and they got like 50 yards each between the wide receivers. But, you know, this is more normal for Minnesota. Their defense isn't very good. They're going to have to throw the ball at times.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, it's always the second half. They never want to.
Yeah.
And then the games where Cousins and Thielen go off, it's because, like, they're behind, like, this game, and they just throw all over the place, and often it's a bad defense like Dallas, and they light it up. But
yeah, I always hate, you know, I mean, it's great for the teams, but I always hate when you get these games and you've got fantasy going. Yeah, the offenses move the ball, but they each took like 8-minute drives, and all of a sudden you want more possessions when you've got a lot of these fantasy guys, unless you have the running backs. If you have the running backs, you're fine. But when you got the wide receivers or quarterbacks, you're like, come on, let's throw the ball more. Let's not grind clock. Let's snap the ball already, for the love of goodness. Yeah, you know, let's go.
Yeah, you want a lot of points per minute. You don't want slow developing. And, you know, it's funny, the Raiders Chiefs was like that.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. It was like they're just each going for like 7 minutes. I mean, they scored plenty of points, but man, that was frustrating. I mean, I'm glad that the Raiders covered, because that was all that the only dog I really had in the fight, but they should have won that game. I mean, it was that Witten penalty was bad, because it made them have to score more. They had to worry about the touchdown when Witten had that 5-yard penalty more than the clock, because you're on the 6. There's no guarantee you're going to score. When they had it on the 1, they could have just almost better to like just purposely get it to the 1-inch line and just go for it on 4th down, you know, and just leave Mahomes with almost nothing, rather than an hour on the 6. We can't just, I would have still run it probably, but you know, it just made it so that like, they had to just score and then leave whatever time was left. And then you knew Mahomes was going to beat them. It was just obvious.
You almost needed to score in a way quicker, because you knew Mahomes was going to beat him. You want more time with the ball later.
but the Chiefs were going to be able to control how much time was left, you know, on their drive. So it was just, yeah, it was just a timing thing. The Raiders are good. They're a good team.
They're legit. I was frustrated because I have Josh Jacobs everywhere. And you know I'm going to get that touchdown if Witten doesn't have that penalty.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, too, like, why are you using Cadence at the goal line anyhow? I mean, you're going to gain another inch? I mean, it was really that close.
It's habit, yeah. It is annoying. Dalton had a good idea, his first and only in his life on the podcast. He said, like, let's say at least for the offense, you're backed up on your half-yard line and you commit a false start, or you know, holding or whatever. Well, I mean, it's like a quarter of a yard penalty. But why shouldn't they just move the first down marker 5 or 10 yards further away?
Because
like it makes no sense. It's like, well, yeah, you can't go backwards, but why would it be first and 20 if you're at midfield, but it's only first and 10 and a quarter if you're at your goal line? Just make it first and 20. Just put the first. It's so easy, but they act, oh, there's nothing we can do. We're backed up. No, there's something you could totally do to enforce the penalty because it encourages just sort of this like reckless, you know, you can do whatever you want. But the same thing happened where I think the Chiefs committed a penalty first, but it was like barely inches.
Yeah.
And it was like a personal foul or something. And yet it's nothing. And then a little false start moves you back 5 yards.
Yeah.
You should get credit or something. You should have like a credit. No, we've got a credit. Sorry. We'll use our credit. That penalty that you got nothing on, we'll just not take our penalty. Because it doesn't like
credit.
It's so,
I love it.
It's so stupid. You should have like a credit. It doesn't.
Yeah. Well, anyway. That was a garbage call too, though. You heard, again, because the microphones were so good, you heard Matthew go, for what? And then the announcers go, right. Yeah, what was that for? They showed a little replay because you watched the condensed version, obviously. So
yeah, I did. I didn't see what he did.
They were like, what was the foul here? We don't know what it was.
Well, what was the one? Because again, I was watching the condensed version. I'm 4th and 1, right at the goal line. They were going to go for it, and then they got a sideline taunting penalty, and then they were like the 15.
I guess like it was just as dumb. It's like the coaches have to stay in a certain area. And they were like multiple coaches well past that box.
Well, why? What's the purpose of that?
I guess that, you know, coaches have to stay between the 20s or whatever. And they had multiple ones like over that line or whatever. And so that's a foul. It's like the illegal shifts and not necessarily, but we didn't have them covered up on this side and those sort of things. There's a reason for it. No one got back to me as far as I know. They didn't get back to me. They might have gotten back to you. Like, what's the rationale for that line? You know, the covered up on the end rule there. Is that this?
I think that might be that you could, like, they wouldn't know their player was there. They, like, hide a small guy behind a big guy, and then all of a sudden he sprints out. He's wide open, player.
But it's like if a guy's offset on the line of scrimmage, that's what I mean by covered up. You know,
what does it mean?
You know, when you got one guy on the outside and he's, like, a step behind the line of scrimmage instead of on the line of scrimmage.
Oh, I see. Oh, I think you need 7 guys on the line or something like that. Oh, I don't know. But I think you need like your 5 linemen and then like 2 other guys at the line. I think so. I might be wrong about that.
Yeah.
But you need like 7 guys at the line of scrimmage for some reason. Maybe because like one guy can go in motion if there's enough, I guess. I'm not really sure what – there's obviously it's – you know, we talked about this last week but it, or maybe on the show. But it might be, you know, the same kind of thing like offsides and –
yeah.
Hockey or soccer, where it's like, oh, there'd be goal hanging if you didn't have this, and we don't want goal hanging. We want legit fast breaks. So there's something that teams would do if they didn't have to worry about this. And I'm not sure what that is in football,
right.
But it's probably got a purpose like that.
It probably does. Moving on other injuries I want to talk about. Julio had the hamstring injury and missed a lot of the second half. And that's a big – that offense, you have Julio – it functions. You don't have Julio, it doesn't function, period. You know, a lot of times you say, okay, you got two good receivers, Julio and Ridley. Oh, that means more targets for Ridley. Oh, it helps. No, it doesn't, though. I think in this case, at least, we can see that Ridley needs the number two corner. He can't deal with, you know, being bracketed. He can't deal with that. Julio is a difference maker. And you could see it, you know, Ryan got sacked 8 times too, but I think some of that was because they could turn the dogs loose. Julio couldn't hurt them.
Yeah, Julio Jones is one of the top 5 receivers of all time. I mean, you can argue who the 4 are, but he's one of the top 5 receivers of all time. So it's not implausible that someone like Ridley, who's a good receiver, first round pick, who's produced ever since he got into the league, it's not the same. You know, he's a good player. Maybe, you know, when Julio retires next year or 2 or 3, we'll see Ridley emerge as that guy. He might. But for now, it looks that way. But yeah, you're right. But the other thing is the pass rush, as you mentioned, was so fierce that it might have just been hard to get going, period. I mean, it was like, you know, DK Metcalf gets shut down by Jalen Ramsey, but same time, you know, Russell Wilson was under assault, so he couldn't really get those, couldn't really even let the play develop long enough, and that might have also happened to Ridley to an extent.
Yeah, I think that's possible. So, you know, it just, yeah, and Ryan, I saw this one breakdown. I think it was Matt Waldman was doing on Twitter, talking about how Ryan just didn't have that sense of urgency to get rid of the ball at times. You know, sometimes it's just the play's not open. Get rid of it. Don't take the sack. Right. And, you know, he didn't do that. Saints defense won people leagues yesterday because of that, though. Meanwhile, Taysom Hill on the other side, you know, he wasn't bad. I mean, he's not throwing it to Kamara. That's a concern. But he was throwing a lot to Michael Thomas. It saved Michael Thomas's day, at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Michael Thomas needed, is like a real QB with some skill. And, you know, now that they got rid of that pretender and they got, the second coming of Tebow, he's set. I don't know. I think the deal is that Kamara, you know, I mean, Breeze is captain check down, and running QBs don't check down. When things break down, they run, they scramble. Yeah. Now, I do think next week there'll be some designed short throws to Kamara in the offense, like that he'll get four catches just from that. But his value takes a legitimate hit because Breeze would just always know where Kamara was. Even if he were blocking, he'll just peel out and be that outlet. And Breeze knows, you know, exactly how to put it, lead him, make it easy for him. And it's just Hill's, when things break down, he's taken off. So
yeah,
this seriously compromises his value. Like Dalvin Cook is better than him now. I think, you know, Henry and Kamara, it's 50-50. I think now you have some competition at the top where Kamara was the easy number one with Breeze. It changes things.
Yeah. Keep going. Kamara was also hurt during the week too. He missed one practice, limited another one. I mean, that's always something to kind of watch for too. You know, he was off.
He got 13 carries.
Yeah. Got the touchdown at least. But, yeah, and also Taysom Hill's going to hurt the backs there in the goal line. It's kind of like the Baltimore running backs. You know, sometimes Ingram had a ton of touchdowns last year, so it doesn't always work that way. But you can lose a lot of rushing touchdowns. It happens with the Pats usually, too, or whoever, wherever Cam's at, too.
Yeah, I know, that's true. I'm a little annoyed because in my NFFC primetime, I'm facing the guy in first place, and a lot of bad things. I have Metcalf and Kamara, and I went to put in for Alex Smith. I bid $2. My own fault that I'm low on fab. This guy went 27, and he did not start Hill. He had someone else good. I can't remember who, Kyler Murray or somebody starting. But he obviously bid on Hill. Perhaps, or maybe he thought, like, just in case Murray gets hurt, you know, he's going to have. But it seems a little far-fetched that, like, because he knew all I had was Baker Mayfield. And I got beat for Andy Dalton by a couple bucks. So I ended up picking up Alex Smith starting him, got 10 points.
Yeah.
Taysom Hill got 27. So that cost me 17 points. I'm up 6. And I've got Antonio Brown. He's got Ronald Jones and the Tampa kicker. So it's close. It's about 50-50. It's, you know, he might be a slight favorite, but it's pretty close. But I should have smashed, basically. And I had the Saints defense, but he had the Browns defense, who had like 21 or something crazy like that. So I'm a little annoyed, and I'm hoping I win it. But basically, yeah, I got blocked. I was the second high bid on the Friday bid. Obviously, this is the second bidding, too. This isn't just, you know, this is like somebody going out to get Hill. And I mean, it was smart by him because he knew, he could see if he was paying attention, that my quarterbacks were, you know, I didn't want to start Mayfield, so I had to pick someone up. I have Danny Dimes, but he's on bye.
Yeah. And you never know. I mean, if Hill shows that he's could do this on a weekly basis, you know, he gets another Atlanta game in 2 weeks. He gets Denver this upcoming week. These are viable games, although Denver really showed up this week.
Well, he has Kyler Murray, so he's definitely not using Hill ever unless Murray gets hurt.
But yeah, but it could have been very useful for you for the upcoming weeks too.
I mean, totally.
You don't really want to use Mayfield ever. I mean,
or Alex Smith, but there's literally the only other guy there.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, against the Bengals, I was like, I'll take Alex Smith, but yeah, I mean, I was the correct call. I got 2 points extra for using Alex Smith, but it was, you know, it was bad choices for both.
Exactly. Before we move on, a quick note from our friends at PropSwap. Smart sports bettors always know where to find the best odds before placing a bet, and that's why smart bettors use PropSwap. You can always find the best odds on PropSwap because you're buying directly from other bettors like yourself. See a ticket you like but think the price is too high? Submit a bid for a price you think is fair, then buy it. PropSwap sellers are always willing to negotiate, and we all know bookies never will. And for a limited time, our listeners can get up to $500 in bonus cash. Just use the promo code ROTO500. That's promo code ROTO500, and PropSwap will match your first deposit up to $500. Become a smarter sports bettor today. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. One other injury note, Rex Burkhead out for the season now for the Pats. You know, it's not like directly hurts things, but you know what I think it does is it actually gives James White a little bit of value. And I don't think he could have used White prior to this, but now he's the pass catching back for the Pats. You know, I think Harris is pretty much ensconced as the runner between the tackles. And, you know, Cam's not running as much either. So I think that actually might have some interest there.
Cam's not running at all, really. And yeah. That's been weird, you know, ever since COVID. It's weird. I don't know. I don't doubt it's because of COVID, but for whatever reason, he's not running. And it's changing. He's not really usable. He had a good game. He actually played well. I watched a lot of that game. The story there was the Patriots, A, just did not tackle very well, and B, have no pass rush at all. It's like Watson just carved him up because he was just standing there. Yeah. I was just very frustrating.
It's like the Jets game on Monday night 2 weeks ago. I mean, we talked about this. I wasn't convinced that the Pats defense was fixed. They got one sack on Flacco in the fourth quarter and one miracle interception where he just did a heat check throw. I mean, they did nothing against him. And this game was very similar. And I was reading, like, they didn't blitz that much. They didn't send the guys after.
Yeah, Watson. They didn't blitz. And it's like, I know Watson's kind of a smart quarterback and he can deal with the blitz, but it's like, you got to blitz if you can't get, obviously you'd rather get home with four. Yeah. You know, with your base rush.
Wouldn't that's we all ideal. Like that? Yes.
Right. Of course. But if you can't, then you've got to mix it up so that like suddenly a corner comes out of nowhere and takes out your quarterback. You can't do it every time because they'll adjust, but just unpredictably blitz, and they never adjusted. So what's the alternative? You just sit there and let them pick you apart and lose the game. I mean, at some point you got to take a chance, and it was really bad. I mean, the Patriots are 4-5 now; they're 4-6. They're almost out of it. It just seemed like just what are you worried about? Just take a chance. There, he's carving you up, and that was the story of the game. Zero pass rush. I think their secondary actually played decently. It was just that. You can't let Watson
right
stand back there for 5 seconds every single snap.
Right. And, you know, some of this is personnel. They had so many guys opt out. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, some of that's coming to roost. You know, and, you know, they did a good job against Baltimore, but that was also in a monsoon. And it's also Baltimore, who's got offensive line problems out the wazoo.
Huge problems. They have huge problems. Baltimore, I watched that game, a lot of it. And first of all, it was awesome. AJ Brown is awesome. That go-ahead touchdown was just like, you know, and then they have Derrick Henry that finishes in overtime, and you're like, they have two guys. Nobody in the history of the NFL has had two more punishing key skill guys. And then Corey Davis is having kind of a little breakout, and Jonnu Smith is good, and Tannehill is a good athlete too. And so this is just a good offense. It's just a really good offense. The play calling is good. It's a sharp offense. The defense is very mediocre. And so they have their flaws. Their special teams are horrible. But this team has ceiling. And I was trying to say about the Colts game, like, okay, the Colts grounded out going on fourth down against the Titans and beat them. But the Titans are the team that could do damage in the playoffs. I don't think the Colts can. I don't think Rivers is good enough. He almost made a horrible throw. He played pretty well. The offense is set up pretty well. Defense is pretty good. But I just don't see a ceiling for them the way, you know, I see it for the Titans.
Yeah, I see what your point is there for sure. The Titans worry me, though, too, because, I mean, they did get manhandled by the Colts in the second half there. They were on the field forever. That defense, to me, is just – it's just meh. You know, and I think, you know, Lamar's struggles – I mean, let's face it. You know, Hollywood Brown's become Lancaster Brown. It's not just like a lesser-known suburb. He's like out in the exurbs. He's nowhere close to Hollywood now. It's just he had a bad drop in the first quarter. He had a near catch in the second quarter of the end zone where, like, okay, that could, you know, some receivers come up with that. That one got broken up, though. The knocks on him about his size have come to roost. I mean, he's just tiny. He doesn't fight for the ball. I mean, they can't throw it, like, they can't throw it up for the grabs ball because he's not going to get it. And so you lose targets.
Yeah, and plus you need offensive line play too for someone like him. You need to get him down the field and throw it behind the defense, and that takes time to develop. And you know, Jackson is so herky jerky. He gets the ball, it's like he can throw a nice deep ball actually, but it's just like read, react, run. It's
everything. He's got to have time, and he doesn't have as much time.
Yeah.
The offensive line, like you said, isn't as good. We've been talking about this all season. They're not getting the chunk plays. They had two big plays to Andrews, but they're just not getting long plays. That's just it's a problem. And I don't see it getting fixed anytime soon.
Yeah, Dobbins emerged from the committee, and he looked pretty good. So that's one thing. I think he's going to get most of the carries. You can't trust him.
He did that against the Steelers 4 weeks ago, and then he kind of disappeared 2 weeks in a row after that. I mean, he should. I mean, Ingram got like six snaps. So maybe they realized finally, okay, stop messing around with Mark Ingram. Okay, he's back, but who cares? Just use Dobbins.
Yeah, I think they're starting to realize that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if it actually happens. Yeah. But it's time. It's deep enough into the season. It's pretty interesting. You know, when the Ravens played the Chiefs in Baltimore, Baltimore was like 4-point favorites. Everyone had them as bigger than just the home field advantage.
Yeah, they're better than the Chiefs. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's on such a small sample. I mean, it was last year's sample also, the priors. But yeah, still, it's just so interesting how easily. And so, you know, we were ranking QBs. You know, Jackson and Mahomes were in 1-2. And I had Mahomes ahead of him. And I had regressed Jackson a decent amount, not nearly to where he is now. I mean, I should have regressed him more, obviously. But it's like Mahomes' game doesn't regress. Mahomes is Mahomes. Like, he's the guy. Mm-hmm. But Jackson was, what is he really? And it's so crazy. This guy's the MVP. And, I mean, if they had a viable backup, he could lose his job. I mean, that's how poorly he's playing. If they had somebody, he could. I mean, no, they wouldn't. He won MVP. But that's how drastic this is. He's like a borderline fantasy QB.
Some of it's on Jackson.
Real life QB.
A lot of that's the offensive line, too, though. And I think it shows, you know, you have one key guy retire, you have another guy that's out for the season, and, you know, the Jenga puzzle comes apart. We've used that analogy a lot of times. Mahomes is Mike Trout to me, though. You know, every year he's going to be good. Someone might have a better season, and so, okay, you can make the case for him not being the MVP, but you know, in your heart of hearts, he's 1A. He's the number one.
He and Russell Wilson, there's two players. Yeah. There's two guys in the league, I think, that are just different than the other guys.
So what does this mean for Kyler Murray next year? How much are you going to regress him?
You got to regress him because he's having like Jackson did, the greatest fantasy quarterback season of all time. A lot, you know, I regressed Jackson a lot. I gave him 26 touchdown passes. It wasn't enough. He had 35 last year in 15 games, 36 in 15 games. I gave him 26 and it wasn't enough. Although he may end up at, 23 or something by the end of the year, but just the whole package. He'll be regressed a decent amount, but he's still going to be like a second or third round pick because those skills, I think Murray's in between Mahomes and Jackson. Jackson was like, he threw a lot of touchdown passes, but he didn't have a lot of passing yards and he didn't have a lot of attempts. And I think like a lot of his value was running. Like so much of his value was being a runner. And I don't know that even last year, even though because his running was such something they had to respect so much, and honor, like he made it easier for him to be a passer, but I don't think it really proved that he was a real NFL level passer. Whereas I think Murray has passed that threshold already, that Murray's already a passer and the running is like amazing, but it's not like if he were a little slow, I don't know if Murray would be a starter in the NFL, but I think Jackson is a lot farther from being, if he were only a passer, say he was as fast as Philip Rivers tomorrow, Lamar Jackson, I don't think is in the NFL. Murray might be. So that's the difference. I think he's in between.
Right.
If Mahomes had no mobility at all, he'd still be like Tom Brady, Drew Brees. You know what I mean? Like he'd be just, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Rodgers has mobility, but he'd still be like a star. Whereas like these other guys, like it's a huge part of their game. Not that that's going to go away, but you just have to regress. What if it's hard? What if things get tougher? But I think because Murray, the other thing is like when Mahomes won his MVP, the Chiefs were scoring ridiculous amounts of points. When Jackson won his MVP, the Ravens had elite everything. You know, the run blocking, everything was great. Murray's surroundings aren't that great. I mean, Hopkins has helped, but it's not like they have an elite offensive line. It's not like they have elite weapons.
True.
You know, Murray, it could actually get better for Murray in some ways, not fantasy wise, but his environment could get better.
Lamar Jackson is ranked what for you now? 5, 6 among quarterbacks?
I got to do the rankings again this week. Maybe like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
I mean,
I can't put him. And I think you're right on that. I think it is. I haven't looked at, that. I had him at like 5 or 6 this week in my rankings, but they play the Steelers on Thanksgiving night this week. He's not going to be in my top 10. I'll tell you that. I don't know where he's going to be, but he won't be in my top 10.
He's kind of matchup independent, though, because it's all about kind of just him getting loose for a couple of big plays.
It is, but the big plays aren't happening. That's the point. The chunk plays aren't happening.
But they can happen unpredictably and quickly. Like, it just takes a couple of, you know, he just turns the corner, beats one safety, and it's, you know, 50-yard touchdown run. So he'll put up numbers in a hurry. But, yeah, I don't see how you can put him ahead of Herbert. I don't think you could put him ahead of Josh Allen. There's just too many guys that I think I'm going to have ahead of him now.
Yeah, it's so funny to say, you know, compare to, you know, rewind 8 weeks or 9 weeks and say, I can't imagine having Lamar Jackson ahead of Justin Herbert. I mean, just all the, you know, at the start of the season, he may not even play that much. He is really struggling to get the offense. You know,
I already had lowered him. I'm looking now from last week. I already had him at 9.
Okay.
Overall. So it goes Murray, Wilson, Mahomes, Watson, Herbert, Allen, Brady, Rodgers, Jackson.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I'm going to leave that. I think I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I think I'm. It sounds about right. Who's right below Jackson?
Rodgers. Below him is Ryan. So he's actually ahead. He's ahead of Ryan.
Yeah, and I see it.
You know, I gotta redo some of these lower guys, but those top 10, I think, are how I want it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Packers Colts. Let's talk about that for a second. There. I like your line there. Close doesn't always equal good.
It was such a horrible game. It was late, you know, so it was almost 1 a.m. my time. And I got to get up early these days to walk the dog in the morning, like, you know, 7 a.m. I'm outside taking him out. And so I was like, I just want to get sleep. And this thing goes to overtime. There were 5 holding calls in a 2-minute span. It was just ridiculous. Some of them were real holds, but it was just so annoying. And then the Colts wouldn't just hand the ball off and run the clock. And then on top of that, Rivers not only threw it, but he almost threw a pick. It's like, what are you making that throw for? Just sit on it and run this clock down and make him use the timeout and get it down to like 50 seconds left in the game or whatever. And then, you know, give him the ball back with 50 seconds and no timeouts. Instead, they had like a minute and 50 and one timeout. It was like, what's the point of this?
Yeah, the third and 26 play, the incomplete pass. The Packers had one timeout still left at that point. It's 101. You make them use the timeout. Period. Right. And they threw on first down too after one of the holds. So it was first and 20 and they threw and had an incomplete pass. Twice they didn't make them use a timeout. It was just infuriating. And I was with you. I had the Colts, minus 2.5. I'm like, don't do that. You win the game by just running the clock here. Just take a knee for God's sake.
Yeah, it was like the Super Bowl with the Falcons when they got sacked and got taken out of field goal range, which would have sealed it. It was just unconscionable, like so obvious what to do, and they just lost sight of it somehow. And Rivers isn't the guy who's going to make a play. You know, he's not going to like roll out and find. He's not Pat Mahomes going to find somebody down the field to make a surprise first down. Just don't even mess with it.
Yeah, but and meanwhile, the Packers too, for that matter, they settled for the field goal at the end of regulation. I say settle because twice they clocked it on first down. You've got the helter-skelter going. It's working. Just keep rolling with it there. You're getting Davante Adams against a linebacker across the middle, and instead, let's let them reset their defense, okay? And then the clock's running. They run it all the way down to, 7 seconds before, and they had to settle for the field goal there because they had no more time. It's like, guys, you could win the game right here. It's over.
Right.
You don't want the team just came back on you. You already blew a big lead. You want to play more? No, just win the damn game.
Yeah, it was horrible. The other thing that was so weird is the Colts had the ball the entire second half because the Packers had a couple fumbles. So the Colts' time possession, I didn't look at it, but it had to be like 25 minutes in the second half. It was absurd. Why were the Colts doing the holding? I mean, usually when you bang up a defense like that for half an hour straight, the defense is Swiss cheese. And yet the Colts are holding every play. Some of it was ticky-tack, obviously. Some of them were legit.
Answer. I think it was just ticky-tack.
Was the game fixed? Who calls 5 holding calls in 2 minutes? It was like, what is going on here?
I'm here to ref the best game of my life. People are here to see me.
It was this. I've never seen anything like it, that many holding calls.
It was crazy. It really was crazy. So, I don't know. I mean, there are obviously some good things in that one. Adams, had the limited practice all week, and he didn't go crazy, but he still was very productive.
Very annoying too. That dude that I was playing had Adams,
of course.
And of course, that overtime, the fact that Colts couldn't chew up the clock. I mean, I think Adams got two catches for like 20 extra yards.
Yeah.
On the subsequent drive. And I don't think he did anything in overtime. Thank God. I mean, I could have lost him. He could have got a touchdown, but just like, put these guys away, get this guy off the field. Adams didn't do much in the second half. He did have a touchdown. It was a sort of normal game. It wasn't like it was a good game, but it wasn't a monster game.
Yeah, that's right. Aaron Jones, you mentioned this too. He hasn't been the same since the quad injury. He paid the bills. He got the touchdown. He had a few catches, but he didn't go crazy. And, you know, granted, Colts run defense is pretty good. That's a big part of that.
But it's been four games or whatever, and he was doing what Dalvin Cook is doing now. Right. He was doing that early in the season.
Like Jacksonville was a good opponent last week, and he didn't go crazy against them either. So that was your sign. So yeah,
he looks fine, but he was like owning the entire game. He was taking over the game fantasy wise and reality wise, and now he's just some guy who catches a few passes and gets 10 carries.
Yeah. The one good thing is he's still good around the goal line. He's still a really good goal line back. You know, I have Josh Jacobs in a lot of places, and I've seen many times now where Jacobs has gotten stuffed around the goal line. Maybe that's the Raiders offensive line some too, but some backs just find those little creases better than others. I feel like Jacobs isn't as good at that, and I think Jones is really good at that.
I think there's something to that, but sometimes it's also just these bunch formations at the goal line where there isn't a crease. Yeah. And so you're asking the guy in Barkley all the time, like, just be like, smash through four people. Well, it doesn't work.
Right.
You know, and whenever it's like Derrick Henry, he can smash through people, but often he's like just walking, standing up right in through That's the true. End zone. And they know it's Derrick Henry. They know he's getting the ball, and yet he's got a big hole to run through. They're really well coached on the offensive line. Somehow, even missing Taylor Lewan, they're still – Henry – I never see a guy just run full speed through like a giant hole and get 20 yards on random carries more than Henry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But it's still infuriating. Like, there is the Raiders-Browns game where Jacobs got stuffed like three times that I remember. Although one of those, arguably, he got in. And you're right. Maybe that is just the Raiders aren't run blocking well there. They don't have the right formations. It happened again last night. A couple of sit times. So they got down to the one and he did not score. There was that, you know, when they got to the fourth and inches that one time, and then there was the play before Witten had the penalty. And of course, Witten, you know, vultures the touchdown too as the added insult. It couldn't have been Aguilar. It couldn't have been anybody useful, but no, it had to be Witten. But anyways, I saw those, you know, the Browns, they got stuffed at the goal line, you know, and last year that happened a lot of times too. If you remember, you know, Chubb had some problems scoring a couple times. This time he didn't even get the carries at the goal line. So frustrating.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt really had like 13 yards on 11 carries, and Chubb just runs roughshod over the defense, and yet they're trying to smash it in with Hunt. He did score one, but he got stuffed another time. Yeah. That was an annoying game. And Wentz is just, it's all guts, no skill. Wentz, someone said this, I should have credited them, but I couldn't remember who it was. He has the triple crown. He has the most sacks, the most picks, and the most fumbles in the league, all three.
Those that are interrelated, is, too. The sacks beget everything else, too, I think, a little
that's
bit.
That's true, but, I mean, to lead in all three?
Yeah.
I mean, Danny Dimes last year led in fumbles, but he didn't lead in picks and sacks. You know, it's like it's hard to lead.
But I bet he was right up there. You were talking about how Dimes is the most pressured quarterback in the NFL at one point. He hasn't been the last couple games as much, but, you know, that it all leads to that.
It's connected, but still, yeah, you're right. It's correlated, but so is, you know, the triple crown, home runs, RBIs, batting average. They're all connected. You know, RBIs and home runs are connected. Still, it's a triple crown, Jeff. You got to respect it.
I do. He's becoming David Carr, unfortunately.
I think trough Brett Favre is what he reminds me of. Just all guts, you know, just like smashing, like running not very fast, but like taking off and
wanting to play hero ball. Yeah, I could see that.
Like head first in, you know, over the first down marker into two linebackers and making it, you know, just he is tough. I mean, he has been, you know, it's just all guts, no skill. And I think they got to turn to Jalen Hurts if it happens again. Because what are you doing? This guy is killing you. And it's like they're getting their receivers back. They're getting
some players back. You got a division to win, Chris. This is huge.
You never know. Chip in a chair, man. You know, like if they – because I saw my brother's a Dolphins fan before this last week. He was like getting excited. He said Giants Dolphins Super Bowl. I said, yeah, the Giants, they're not sniffing the Super Bowl, but they could win the division. You know, they could get to the playoffs.
Yeah. Both Eastern Division wins would be flawed. Quick note, well, I want to talk a little Dolphins here in a second. But first, sports bettors know that magic happens when you turn a hunch into action and apply the right amount of expertise. That's why BetMGM has teamed up with RotoWire to offer new BetMGM customers a free six-month RotoWire subscription when they place their first bet. Register on BetMGM app on the BetMGM app or the website, and once you make your first sports wager, you'll receive a season's length of RotoWire's unmatched sports insights. That's us. Find out why BetMGM is the king of the sports books by signing up and placing your first bet today. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager, Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, and West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. In Tennessee, call or text the Red Line at 800-889-9789. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer is not available in Nevada. All right, Chris. So Tua got benched after, and they said it was performance. It wasn't an injury, and the loss to Miami. And, you know, he was pretty bad. He was 11 for 20 for 83 yards. He got sacked six times. That pass rush got home a lot, and he looked flustered. You know, Fitzmagic came in, led him to a drive, but then threw an end zone pick that was pretty bad. It was just okay. It was just a little bit better. But, you know, this was a surprising result. I had the Dolphins my best bet. I was 9-4, but I missed my best bet, and badly.
Yeah, I was 7-6, lost my best bet. It was frustrating, though. I was like, I was winning the Chargers game. I actually thought that the safety they took cost me, but you're right. It was 8.5, not 7.5. I was like, what? I was like, I got this one. They're going to win by 8. Took a safety, but of course it didn't matter.
That would be such a tilting way to lose, especially if you get a parlay. Maybe, and probably some people, I can't imagine that number getting down to 7.5. But
no, I don't think anyone had it there. I just forgot that it was 8.5. Yeah, that was the Dolphins. I mean, Tua was bad. They couldn't move the ball. And I should have known. I mean, the Dolphins were smashing everybody and covering easily. But it was one of those things that they weren't good or consistent enough offensively to just go into Denver on the road in altitude against a defense that's not terrible and just be assured of moving the ball. And they just really couldn't at all. Now, Melvin Gordon. So I had Melvin Gordon in my lineup last week where he did nothing. And I had Ronald Jones on my bench when he went crazy. And then this week I had Ronald Jones active and Melvin Gordon on my bench when he scored two touchdowns. He almost scored three touchdowns, but he fumbled, which put the Dolphins, you know, it was over if they even kicked the field goal.
Yeah.
But Melvin Gordon fumbles, the Dolphins get the ball back down seven. I'm like, oh, I'm going to cover the spread. We got a chance. And Fitzpatrick drives them down to the red zone and then throws the pick. But Fitzpatrick definitely gave him a better chance than Tua yesterday. Yeah. He moved the ball. It was credible. Devontae Parker is really good. He's a good receiver. He makes contested catches.
You know,
he's tough.
He's a Jaguar, though. You know, not a Jacksonville Jaguar. He's like the car. He's really good, but he breaks down a lot. And he needs to be perfect.
He's played through some stuff this year. I don't know. That guy is – I watched that guy play. He's good.
Yeah.
He's like a – he's physical, and he's figured it out, I think, at the NFL level. But, yeah, that was they just couldn't get anything going, and they're not that sound, you know, metric-wise, per-play stuff. But the Dolphins, they just couldn't lose. They were, like, at a charmed life, and they started off up 7-0 right away. It was like, Dolphins, easy money. And that was really it. It was really it for the rest of the game or any production for them.
By the way, that third near touchdown for Gordon, it was originally called a touchdown, but it wasn't
close. But it was
not, it was a horrific call. I mean, it was like, how do you – I mean, every once in a while you see like that, like, oh, yeah, but they got it on replay, so we're fine. No, it's not fine because you're wasting time on that. And just in some cases, you have to make challenges. You know, it should be just get the call right. I saw there was a lot of disputed calls in the Northwestern-Wisconsin game. And yeah, Northwestern got the benefit of most of them, so it was kind of funny. And so you can ask all the RotoWire guys about that. But there was also a spot that went Wisconsin's way that was like a yard off. It wasn't like just like a little bit off. Okay, you could plausibly say he got the first. No, it's like a yard and a half off. And it's like, how do you miss that? And that sort of stuff happens, but it's just terrible.
So it's funny. Like, I hate replay because I feel it's, well, two things. One, I just think it just takes away from the game so much. And the benefit we get from getting it right is so much less than just like the delays and the endless lawyering and the fact that these catch rule comes into play, all these rules that don't exist. It's a fake rule, the catch rule. Oh, got to make a football move. That doesn't exist. That's not a rule. They added that so that they could have a basis for reviewing a replay in real time. If there's no replay, they just, is it a catch or not? I know a catch when I see it. That's the rule, right? Everyone knows what a catch is. You got to come down with 2 feet in bounds. We knew that. This whole lawyering stuff is new. But that Gordon call was the reason for replay. Like, there was a Vinny Testaverde touchdown, which was clearly a yard short.
Yeah, I remember that.
Replay. So the problem is that the technology exists on TV. And so you just couldn't, once you can like audit it on TV, you had to have a mechanism for changing it because people just wouldn't be able to believe the NFL. I wonder what this is similar to.
Yeah.
And so you have this, so they had to do it. They were forced to do it because people could see it. But I also think they called the Gordon thing a touchdown because those are automatically reviewed.
Yeah, I think that is a crutch. Yeah, I think so. And in some cases, like, oh, you let the play out. Okay, fine, I get it. Because you don't want to have the error of commission. You want to have, you know, let the play happen. But you get a lot of these, oh, that's clearly not a fumble, or, you know, or, you know, it's clearly not a catch. And you waste all this time. And like, come on. But you do that because the one time you might have missed it, and you blow the whistle, the play's dead. So I get it. But still.
Right. Well, that's the problem. So I call it a touchdown because it'll be reviewed. Otherwise, the coach has to use a time, risk a timeout, which could change the game. So it's a whole, the whole system is kind of screwed up. Just the incentives and the, I do think they did, because they huddled about it and they called it a touchdown knowing it would be looked at and they would get that right. Cause there wasn't like a crowd of people. They were going to get that right. So they figured, okay, we'll get this right. But it does really slow down the game. And
yeah, but the turnovers are also reviewed. So either way, it was going to get reviewed. But
that's right. That's true. They didn't need to do that. And also the presumption, once you call it a certain way, then that becomes the presumption.
Yeah, there's not enough clear and convincing evidence.
Yeah, exactly. So you do distort it. There's no ideal solution. I do think it was better. It's kind of like, you know, it's like elections. It's like, well, it's not about the mechanics of it. It's about people being like, okay, I believe in this. I trust this.
Yeah.
You know, like even it's, you know, in some ways, like the belief is more important than the accuracy because people need to believe. Like, you need to be like, oh, we won the game. They won the game. They moved on in the playoffs. Like, does it really matter that the guy was an inch short in a championship game if nobody knows that he was an inch short? Mm-hmm. Say a guy gets into a pile. This is the, if the tree falls in the wood, you know, forest, right, and no one hears it. It's like a guy gets a handoff. He crashes into the pile. It's too dense to understand. They call it a touchdown. They review it 20 times. You know, it's impossible to really know. Nobody really knows, but you know what? It was a touchdown. And then we move on and nobody thinks about it because they did as good a job as they could. And we accept this team as the winner and blah, blah, blah. And the NFL doesn't have a problem. But if you have a replay and it shows the guy's short and you know that he's short, and they have no way to overturn it. And so they're like, the NFL's a fraud, you know, because the wrong team's ahead, you know, like the Saints Rams Super Bowl thing, it becomes, they can't have that because it undermines the,
right,
the faith in sort of like who the champion is and what's the point of rooting for a team then and all of this. So, I think it's almost just like before replay, it's fine. They could do whatever they want. But after the advent of television replay, they got technology forced their hand. They have to do these reviews as much as it sucks.
Yeah. And the thing is, it illustrates the absurdity of it too. I mean, we have, you know, yes, you have to do this, but then every play starts with the spot. Starts with where is the ball starting?
Yeah.
And you're going to have, you know, you've got these sideline judges that aren't right there with the play a lot of times. They're running along too. Their eyes are jiggling. They're running around. They're slower than the play itself. They can't possibly keep up with the play. If it happens to finish in front of them, great. But a lot of times, like, oh, where did he get that down exactly? Oh, it was right over there, right there. And it's, oh, but we have to have this precise spot. And meanwhile, by the way, this exact 10-yard chain we're going to drag out and put it here. We're going to have this perfect spot.
The chain is some real 20th century shit. I mean, I don't know why.
It's insane. You know? I mean, it just shows the absurdity of the whole situation, though, because you can't have that degree of precision unless you have like a GPS in the ball and you have these special $100 footballs every time. And but we got to go.
Well, they can make that
see exactly where the spot is. It would just drag it down. The game would take 17 hours to do it right.
Well, they can make it cheap, that technology. I think I was talking to Dalton about this on the Real Man Wood Pod, and like, you know, I don't, the problem with digital stuff is if it malfunctions, you're really screwed.
Oh yeah, of course.
And, because
you hack the football.
They hack the football. Yeah, they're like, no, we won the game. They hacked the football, dude. They hacked the football, obviously. No, but seriously, no, I mean, this is like perfect because we really are in a moment of reality where what one's prior is like really color, like what happens, what actually happens doesn't matter. We just need to find like a shared belief system that we, you know, look at the news. Like it used to be like the anchor, there's three networks and the anchors would tell the news and people believe the news. That was the news, you know, reliable in 1965 or 1975, probably not that reliable. There's propaganda and CIA, all the stuff then too, but it's just like, we just kind of agree. We had a consensus, you know, it built consensus. You watch the news, this is what happened. We all agreed on it, whether it was fake or real. It was like, okay, well, we agree on it. Right. But now that we're fragmented so much and, you know, teams, obviously sports has always been like that. Sports was ahead of its time because if I'm this fan and you're that fan, we see the same play and we're like, screw you, man. That was definitely, you know, sport, you know, that of course bias sports fans all the time. So, but this is just, it's all coming to a head. And now we say, well, how do we make it precise? How do we put the electronics in the ball and all this stuff? But the thing is, the electronics in the ball would be way more precise and make way fewer errors. It's like self-driving cars. You know, they don't crash as much as humans, but at least the human might have skid marks before the crash. You know, it's the self-driving car, when it makes an error, could make an error of a magnitude that you can't even imagine.
Right.
And imagine if like the beeper goes off totally unpredictably and everyone stops. I mean, you could have a total disaster where a Super Bowl is just ruined because like the electronics malfunction or something. I don't know. To me, a human error is like a small error that you can look at replay and fix. A systemic sort of like, and I don't want to say hack because in football, well, there's bettors on it, but I think that's the less likely thing. But just some sort of, you know, some sort of error in a system-wide error, a glitch.
Yeah.
So there's no perfect solution, but this is illustrating the problems with the world that we're in right now.
That's right. That's right. All right. I think that's a good way to wrap it up, actually. Good closing point. We got our XM show coming up in a couple, like 20 minutes. So we'll talk to you soon. And thanks for everybody for listening. Got Joe and Jake doing the Free Agent podcast tomorrow. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Thanks for listening to and watching our podcast. Have a great day.